You are listening to True Trek.
No!
Logic.
Where we
review
the Star Trek episode.
And enjoy
Trek.
Trivia.
On board.
The Federation.
Timeship Relativity.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to Trek and Logic, where we review Star Trek episodes and enjoy Trek trivia aboard the Federation Timeship USS Relativity. This is Trek and Logic, number 155 for Stardate 2014.264. Today, we'll be reviewing the Voyager episode, Life Signs.
This is the third time you've been late this week, Mr. Paris.
I'm creating a holographic body. This exact procedure was developed by Dr. Leonard McCoy in the year 2253.
So maybe you should talk to some of these people, because I'm not the only one around here who's got a problem with you.
Your experience in the Vidian prison suggests Klingon DNA is resistant to the phage.
I still have nightmares about what those people did to me. And now, you want to crack open my head, cut out a piece of my brain, and give it to her?
Hey, Mike, is it true you could turn me into a hologram?
It's possible, but most biological beings really can't handle the transition to photonic existence. They all seem okay at first, but eventually they all come to the point where they have this sort of existential crisis about whether they're really the person that they used to be or not. And, you know, if we don't put them back in their bodies, they all tend to go insane.
Oh, do you think it's an ego thing?
I think it might be.
So somebody with a strong enough ego would probably survive the process.
It's possible.
Okay. So anyway, how do you know so much about what happens to people who go through this process?
I'm not at liberty to say, sir.
Carrie, every time someone makes that statement, it almost always leads directly to your experiments. Have you been turning people into holograms?
You know, saying that it directly leads to my experiments is kind of a misnomer. Now, sometimes it will sometimes segue into my experiments, and sometimes my experiments have had some sort of bearing on it, but not in a direct manner. And so I really resent you saying that it directly goes towards my experiments. Besides, let's not forget who is all about giving people things that they might not want, which would be Ben. Right, Mike?
He does seem to like to do that.
Yes. I just want to give you the ability to have this. Whether you use it or not.
I'm going to force you to have the ability to choose to have a physical form.
Yes. And so you don't think he would go the opposite way? Uh-huh. See?
All right. Well, Bill? So,
yeah.
Are you fixed now? I mean, are you here? Really here? And not going to vanish? Or you're not a hologram, are you?
No, I'm actually happy to say that Carrie did not perform this experiment that you're talking about on me for once.
I love
the whole... I feel like I'm always being asked to do take the poison or, you know, fly into some, you know, radiation cloud to see if it...
I don't ask
I'm
you
like
to
the
do
only
that.
One... I'm sorry. Maybe. Oh, are you saying this doesn't happen? We do have a record.
She said she doesn't ask you.
Yeah, that's right. You don't. You never ask.
It's our captain that's doing the ask, the voluntelling.
Yes.
The voluntelling.
All right. Well, fortunately, I'm temporally stable and I'm made of flesh and blood.
Yes.
No photons here. I'm actually wearing real clothes. I'm wearing real clothes.
Oh, nice.
The interesting thing here is that, as we learn in this episode, we kind of holographically build up layer upon layer of bone and flesh and that type of thing. So I'm not sure, Bill, you could really know if you're holographic or not.
And then we put holographic clothes on them.
Well, that goes without saying. So I could go crazy by the end of this mission?
I guess that'll tell us
Going crazy means that you have a ways before you get there.
Yeah, that's true.
You have been on this ship for a while, so.
Well, I haven't been a hologram the whole time.
Maybe a short
trip.
Have
I?
No, I was just going to tell you it may be a short trip to go crazy. Just step over to the left.
Oh, I got it. No wonder we don't have an actual race for Bill. He's created.
In a test tube in Carrie's lab?
No, in a hologram.
Oh, right.
This is very disturbing to me. It's very disturbing. And I'm not saying nothing.
Let's get to this review before anything else happens. Although it would be nice to have duplicates of me.
This is the one where the doctor gets a girlfriend and Paris is about to get his butt kicked off of Voyager.
This was written by Kenneth Biller and directed by Cliff Boll. It originally aired on February 26, 1996, and Geos ranks this episode 101st of 171 episodes.
All right, well, here's a little... This is one of my favorite little bits of... there wasn't a whole lot of... I mean, like, you know, production stuff on this was like, the Mars set was a set. And a blue screen.
Wow,
fascinating. I could imagine. I'm shocked. Oh, boy.
And what about the car?
Real car. And like...
It was holographic?
No. Well, it was supposed
to... Not to the film crew, no.
No.
Oh. Back on planet reality, or USS reality. Then the other one was like, yeah, that was a 3D model when they were building the hologram up from the bones and stuff. Like, oh, really? I can't believe it. You know, this is really fascinating stuff. But anyway, this little tidbit I thought was pretty interesting. Robert Picardo was unaware during the episode's production that the writers had intended for the Doctor to have an unseen sexual experience with Dinara Pell. Oh, actually, in the holographic Martian environment. The other thing I read was that it was between that scene and another scene, but I didn't think they actually got it on at Mars. But anyway, but despite this degree of unawareness, the amount of romance here initially surprised Picardo. It was pretty romantic for Star Trek, he said, but that was an unusual one they fooled me on, he conceded. And then so later in season 4, in the episode Message in a Bottle, the Doctor reveals that he had sexual relations with someone for which he had to make a, quote, necessary addition to his program. So that little bit, you know, actually does play forward into the future.
Wow. Which I thought
was kind of interesting. And one line of dialogue, it was like Picardo had a really, like, it was pretty challenging, was he said, the hardest line I've ever had to deliver as an actor was, before you, I was just a collection of photons held together by force fields. And... You know, what was particularly difficult about the line was to say it with a dewy gleam in your eye, you know? But it was probably the best line of the whole episode. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so now there was a lot of back and forth on this. Apparently there's a lot of contention about how to end the story, a lot of back and forth. The script changed quite a lot, and one, at least I think it was Bill. It was a Biller and himself who was like, "Yeah, this is a lot of fun to write because I think he enjoyed the process." But ultimately, you know, they went with the ending that they went with because they thought it sent a nice message that people can see beyond, you know, someone's diseases and things
right.
like that. But about the script, Jerry Taylor said this is one of being among the best episodes of Voyager's first two seasons. She further remarked, Life Signs, the story in which the Doctor fell in love, was a classic Star Trek storytelling. However, she ultimately thought the episode was let down by its subplot involving the, you know, the recurring storyline of Paris being a screw-up
right.
and getting into it with Chakotay. She's like, that would have been a classic if it didn't have those, quote, stupid scenes with Paris in it. It would have been one of those little jewels, but it will be forever tainted.
Wow.
I love that she called it tainted. She went on to say, Life Signs, I think, might have emerged one of those little classics, but it's forever sullied by the presence of some scenes that were just odd and out of place. And if you simply look at the episode alone, it's like, what's going on with that? It just poisoned the episode, she says. Which, I get it, but, you know, at the same token, I think it's being a little hard on it because they were trying to do something with a multi-episode
right.
story arc, and like, which is not something they really did a lot of in Trek prior to that.
No.
And this was still, I mean, it's season 2, but, you know, they had a lot of things. I don't know. I thought it was kind of an interesting idea, but when you watch the episode out of context, as I just did, it's just like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on here, but, you know, My fiance was like, wait, what's that all about? And I'm right. like, yeah, okay, that's something they're doing. See that guy and this, you know, I had to kind of explain it because it just looks out, like, totally out of place.
Right. And see, I only knew it because we did another one where he was acting like a real dork in their yep. little cantina thing.
Yeah, and we talked about it.
We talked about it before. So otherwise, I would have no clue, and Paris would look like a total screw-up that needs to spend some time in the brig. Maybe, you know, he's drinking on the job or something. Who knows?
Yep.
I know. I thought he was delivering babies.
Well, yeah. He does that too in his off time.
And apparently putting it back because later on they talk about her having a maternity yeah. to the doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and Paris does end up becoming the, well, at first he was the field med tech or something. And then he goes right. back to being his assistant after Kes moves on.
Yep.
All right. In the first scene, we continue with a theme we've seen in season 2. Paris acting like a douche and Chakotay being frustrated.
This is the third time you've been late this week, Mr. Paris.
After Paris's excuses, they pick up a distress call from a Vidian shuttle and the occupant is dying. They beam her to sickbay and the doctor finds her brain is routed through a neurocortical stimulator and he has an idea. He could transfer her brain data into the holomatrix. Kes is concerned there's not enough storage for the brain's data. The doctor scoffs at her.
My program contains over 50 million gigaquads of data, which I don't have to tell you is considerably more than the most highly developed humanoid brains.
So, he creates a holographic body with a neat special effect and copies her data into the holomatrix he's just initiated.
Who are you?
I'm the chief medical officer of the Federation Starship Voyager. We received your distress call and brought you aboard.
What have you done to me?
It's quite simple, really. I used the undamaged chromosomes in your cerebellum to recreate your original DNA code, and then programmed the computer to project a holographic template based on that genome.
Holographic?
A three-dimensional projection of light and energy. See for yourself. Your neural patterns were degrading rapidly. It was too late to expect results from inoprovaline, so I was forced to improvise. Not that it would have occurred to just any physician. Why are you crying?
I'm sorry. I
thought you'd be pleased.
I am. I just never expected to look healthy again. I've been sick for so long.
I'll need a complete medical history. How long have you been ill exactly?
I was first diagnosed with aphasia when I was 7.
And when did you begin receiving replacement tissue?
About that same time. At first, it was hard to get used to the changes, but it happened so often that after a while, I almost stopped noticing. I never thought I'd see myself again. Thank you. This is the most extraordinary thing anyone has ever done for me.
I wouldn't be too grateful. There are serious limitations to being a hologram. First of all, we can only exist within environments equipped with holo-emitters, such as the sickbay.
You mean you're...
I'm this ship's emergency medical holographic program.
You're a computer simulation?
An incredibly sophisticated computer simulation.
I'm sorry. What did you say your name was?
I don't have a name. It wasn't part of my original program. However, you, I'm sure, have one.
Denora. Denora Pell.
Well, Miss Pell, may I ask what someone with an illness like yours was doing alone in space with no access to medical care?
I was helping to treat an outbreak of the phage on Phina Prime. I was on my way back to my home colony, but it's a long journey and my condition got worse.
You're a medical practitioner of some kind?
A hematologist.
Well then, perhaps given your expertise, you can help me with your treatment.
My treatment? I feel fine.
Unfortunately, that's only temporary. Your synaptic patterns will eventually degrade if we don't get them out of the pattern buffers and back into your brain.
How long?
A few days, perhaps a week.
I see.
Your real body is in stasis. As you can see, we have to find a way to repair your damaged neural tissue. Is something wrong?
It's nothing.
I'm eager to discuss treatments.
Of course.
You know, I have to say that was a pretty good special effect of them first out doing the skeletal structure and then organs and then the muscular tissue.
Muscles.
Popeye talk
right
there.
Muscular.
The spinach.
Muscular tissue and then the holographic clothes.
Yes. See, but that's okay because she's actually a hologram.
Right. She's actually a hologram. It's a big difference. It was
same energy.
No, it's not, because once they put the holographic clothes on her, they don't have to continue simulating all of the internal organs.
Which brings us to another question.
Why did they make them in the first place?
Yeah.
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 I think the only thing I could think is that because he was trying to develop her looks. No, he was trying to create her looks from her genetics. So he was kind of building her up from the base of her DNA to make sure that he got what she looked like.
He had to do that by making holograms.
No, he could have just had it process her DNA and figure out what she'd look like.
Final projection.
Well, yep.
And, you know, the DNA part would also mean that he'd have to tell what was shut off by epigenetics and what she actually looked like instead of what her total genome was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it would have been a guessing game anyway.
Right.
So maybe he could have had run a simulated life program.
Right.
Demonstrating what type of environment she grew up in.
Like that Spore?
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But I like that, you know, he can be self-contained within the computers, but her stuff in the pattern buffer can only last like a week and then it degrades.
That didn't strike me as weird, though. Because, like,
that's the pattern buffer they use for the transporters.
Right. But couldn't they put her into the computer? Because that's what he was talking about doing.
Oh, like make a copy.
Yeah.
But then it's not actually her quantum data anymore. Now you've actually just changed her into a computer copy of a person.
Hey.
Well, if her body was going to die, he could have.
Yeah, but you know, you get into that whole thing with the soul and stuff where you're basically killing her and making a computer copy.
But no. If she were dying and was not able to be fixed at all,
yeah,
would that have been so bad?
Well, he can't do it if he's taking a Hippocratic oath.
Right.
All right, hold on. Got this whole thing with the soul here. That's a big problem. So you're saying because Will Riker is actually a copy and Thomas Riker is the one down on the planet who got left on the planet. So nope. Will Riker,
nope.
And the reason he sits like that is because he has no soul.
Yeah. No.
After him. Yeah. No, I didn't know where you were going with that, but I really like where you ended up.
Yeah, you know what? Once you got there, I almost wanted to accept it, but no, that's not what I'm saying. They would both technically have a soul because they were created from the quantum data.
What does it matter?
Of the transporter.
Data.
Well, it seems to matter to people.
I think this is a really slippery slope, and there is no answer here because we're talking about something that is so outlandish in terms of the real world anyway. Teleportation? Come on. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, right now, that is a completely outlandish idea. And, you know, it's so...
But they made a movie about it.
Yeah.
About the guy who was slowly dying, and they just uploaded his consciousness to the...
Oh, yeah, I heard that was a horrible movie.
Oh, yeah, I heard that was a real winner, too. Ray Kurzweil must be really upset that movie tanked. That's all I got to say about that.
That's from a Star Trek episode, a Next Generation episode.
No, his brain expanded into the computer.
No, not that one. That was another one. The guy captured Data and wanted to upload his brain to Data.
Oh, right.
Got pushed to the computer, and that one lost its soul.
Right. See?
Okay, so computers and programs can't have souls. Mike
has no soul.
But this episode is trying to prove the opposite.
Yeah.
Right. I know, and that's kind of
a slippery slope.
I know it's a very slippery, but it's a very interesting question.
Yeah.
And we start to see it here where he's created, you know, this holographic body for her, so that they can discuss treatment. And he doesn't even know she's a physician at this point either. Or, you know,
right.
a med tech, maybe not a true physician. But some kind of... Maybe. Maybe she's
a hematologist.
Yeah. I mean, so...
Pretty heavy duty in terms of blood work?
Yes.
Yeah, in terms of blood.
So...
Right, so she's a serious doctor, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's got the phage and she's treating people. Is it contagious?
She's treating people with the phage.
They've already got it.
So phage, it doesn't really matter.
Almost the whole Vidian race has it.
Yeah.
In fact, this is the only episode where we saw a non-infected Vidian, and that's only by way of the holodeck. I mean, the holodeck emitter.
That's true.
I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yes, it's really, really bad. It's bad enough that they steal organs from people.
Yeah, that's what happened.
To B'Elanna?
To B'Elanna.
Or almost.
Yep.
Do they actually steal it, or do they almost steal it?
They stole it. I think they had to go retrieve it. I really like this show's, the Doctor's, and it sounds bad, but his inhumanity.
Yeah.
He doesn't, why are you crying? He doesn't understand that.
Oh, yes.
He doesn't know what happy tears are.
Right. Yeah, and I did like that, because he was like, he was totally stunned, because he's like, everything about my programming told me you should be happy.
But nothing about his programming told him that sometimes a reaction to happiness is crying.
Exactly.
Which is you know, it makes sense when you look at his creator and the fact that he didn't really probably talk to too many doctors about bedside manner when he made the EMH, you know? Because he didn't think it would ever be used like this, I guess.
Anyway. The other thing I wanted to point out is that Susan Dial, the actress, she was really good.
Yeah, she was.
Fantastic work.
And it worked great because Robert Picardo's really good. So they're both showing these reactions throughout this episode that are kind of off. I mean, she's the more human of the two.
Right.
Right.
And then.
But she's had to live in isolation amongst her own people her whole life.
Right. So she hasn't had a normal life by any stretch of the imagination.
So there's a lot of growth to be had by both.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really do like that the Doctor's like, I can't believe no one's ever thought about doing this before. Can you imagine how many crewmen he would have like made holographic while he's treating them if he'd really thought about it before?
Right.
Oh, yes. Let's just transfer your body into this hologram while I do perform surgery. Would you care to watch? Yeah, I'd really like to watch you chop open my body.
Could you hold that clamp for me right there?
Yeah.
Well, actually
I need you to hold. I need you to reach in and massage your own heart.
What? Well, you know, they would have a vested interest in the surgery.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true. No, not quite so vigorously. You're going to live. I'm sorry. I'm just nervous.
But actually,
I'm not a doctor.
You know what I was thinking? It could actually be a kind of a boon and a negative thing, because you could make the person a hologram while they're being operated on, and they could be sitting with their family while they're in surgery.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they don't make it, they've had this time with their family, and then the doctor has to come out and say, I'm sorry you didn't make it.
I'm sorry you're dead.
You have 4 days before your synaptic pathways degrade.
Exactly.
See?
But, you know, then that would be time that they could spend with their family and say goodbye. It would actually be kind of cool.
That would be awesome.
I don't know if that would be awesome.
I really don't.
The answer is yes, it definitely would.
No.
I mean, think about it.
That would not be awesome. Not in my opinion. I don't think it would be awesome.
Let me give you an example. I get in a horrendous car wreck. They take me in, and I was just alone. And so my body dies, but I have 5 days to say goodbye to my family.
I get it now. I wasn't thinking of it. For whatever reason, I wasn't thinking of it from the perspective of the victim of the accident. I was thinking of it from the perspective of the families.
Right.
Well, and even as a family member, if you lost them without the ability to say goodbye to them, I mean, you know that they're going to die, but now at least you have some time with them to, they're not just lost to you immediately and forever.
You know what it's like? It's a lot like that. There's a Doctor Who episode about the library. And
yes. Yep.
It's a lot like that.
Yep.
What's the name of it again? Darkness and the Shadows in the Library or something like that? Something in the library. It's the one where we meet River Song for the first time.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the last time.
Yes.
Depending on your perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Vashta Narada, which were cool.
Yes.
Yes, but that's way off topic on this.
Again.
Well, no, not really, because it's kind of the same thing.
But they possessed a skeleton.
Well, and we are talking about the Doctor.
Yes.
Just not the right one.
Just the wrong Doctor.
They do have the same name, though.
Yes.
Moving on.
Until this next clip. Good segue, huh? How about that? How you like me now?
The Doctor's research finds that Klingon brain tissue is resistant to the phage, and both he and Dinara eventually convince B'Elanna to donate some of her tissue. While the Doctor and Dinara work on a strategy, Dinara wants to use her new body. The Doctor has just the place to go.
wonderful. If I had a place like this to go to, I'd be there every day.
Don't your people have recreational facilities?
Congregating in groups is strictly regulated. It's considered to be a threat to public health.
A wise policy.
I suppose. Sometimes I think my people spend so much time trying to save lives, they don't know how to live anymore.
Doctor! Aren't you going to introduce me to your date?
She is not my date. She's my patient.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
Mr. Neelix, this is Dr. Dinara Pell.
As Chief Morale Officer, may I be the first to welcome you to Voyager.
Madame, your loveliness illuminates our dark little cavern. May I have the pleasure of this next dance?
Go away. Immediately, both of you. You're disturbing my patient.
You are just jealous because you cannot dance.
Let's go. You're making the lady nervous. Nice to meet you.
I apologize.
No, they were just being nice.
Irritating, isn't it?
I guess I'm just not used to so much attention. Where I come from, when you're as sick as I am, people, healthy people, stay away from you. I guess I forgot for a second that I don't look like that anymore.
It's a natural response.
All this talk about me. There's still so much I'd like to know about you.
There's not much to tell, really. I was activated on Stardate 48308. Since that time, I've performed 347 medical exams, healed 11 compound fractures, performed 3 appendectomies, and in my greatest feat of medical prowess, I once cured Mr. Neelix of an acute case of the hiccups.
You're very funny.
Well, several clinical studies have shown humor to be very therapeutic. Consider it part of your treatment. What is it?
It's just that I haven't laughed in a very long time. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Pell.
Please, call me Dinara.
As you wish. Dinara.
And what about you? What should I call you?
Well, as I said...
I know you don't have a name. Would it be all right if I gave you one?
Well, I...
How about Schmullis?
Schmullis?
It was my uncle's name. He used to make me laugh, too.
Dr. Schmullis. I think I like the sound of that.
Okay, I have to start out by saying, I don't know why, but I hate that name.
Because it sucks!
It totally sucks! There's something that just strikes at my core programming that makes me despise that name.
Did you get a little bit of like reflux out of your stomach, maybe? Like, it's so terrible.
It's like, how could he even say the name Dr. Schmullis? I think I like that. I think I like the sound of that. Really?
Acting.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I think I just heard a country song on the radio today that was like, you know, basically, you know, I said, yeah, it's great when, you know, like she gave me a drink. It tasted terrible. And I said, it's great, you know, or whatever. I mean, he may just be trying to impress this
right.
lady, I
yeah,
suppose.
I mean,
like
I
his
realize.
Programming's kicking in. But because he would not be the first male to lie about something like that if it thought it was going to get him somewhere with a girl. But yeah, that name is just terrible. And it's like they had to give him a really horrible name so it couldn't possibly stick because they didn't want to give him a name yet, you know?
Right.
So it's like Schmullis.
It's like the
Schmullis.
That'd be the Latin name for some kind of mollusk.
Yeah, yeah. Schmullis, Schmullis fungus among us. I got a Schmullis.
So anyway, other than the horrible, horrible name, I actually liked the rest of the scene and the fact that, you know, she was like shocked when the guy came up and wanted to take her hand to dance with her because she was so used to people being repelled just by being near her.
Right. She pulled her hand away, which is interesting.
Right.
Right.
Did you see how he was credited, what his character's name was?
The dancing guy?
Yeah.
The gigolo.
It just said gigolo.
Gigolo.
And I didn't expect it to say gigolo, so I'm like, gigolo? Who's gigolo?
Gigolo.
Oh, my God. That was the gigolo.
It could have been an alien
God.
Name.
Did they really call
yeah,
him
Yeah, that was his name.
Gigolo.
You know, I'm like, wow, gigolo, huh? Okay, wow. Yeah, so, like, you see Paris programming in Holosuite, like, let's put in a little something for the ladies.
That's right.
Yeah,
a gigolo.
And he looked really awkward too. He had one of those spoon depressions in his head.
Yeah, and that just terrible. Yeah, and what? And what's? I'm trying to think of the name of that Richard Gere movie. All of a sudden, American Gigolo. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Federation.
Oh, I thought you were
going to
say Pretty Woman.
Federation Gigolo.
Because we're just
no, no, not the one. Not the one where he gets together with a prostitute. The one where he plays a prostitute.
Oh.
Because we're just going to see how many other shows and movies we can mention in this episode's review.
It appears to be the case.
So I think that's
hey,
all
he was
I
in another time travel episode.
You mean movie, not
movie.
Episode.
Yeah.
Richard Gere.
No. The guy who played the gigolo.
Time Quest.
Time Quest.
Time Quest.
Yeah, where
wait,
they...
Wait, what's the tagline? What if JFK...
Had lived?
Had lived.
Had lived. What if JFK had lived?
Yeah, it seems like a kind of obvious end of that sentence.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It was like maybe if... What if JFK was a time travel person? And we just thought he was killed, but he was going back in time.
What if JFK was a mutant? He's trying to save him. He was one of us. Anybody get the reference? X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen
that.
Oh,
great spoiler, Bill.
No, that's not a spoiler. Oh, cry me a river. That's sort of a spoiler.
I was a little sick and tired of the accordion after a while, though.
Yeah.
Because that's all I could focus on while they're talking.
It would have been much better if it was some Cajun restaurant with some Cajun music in the background.
Yeah,
if you're going to use the accordion.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Don't mess with my toot toot. Sorry, now I've insulted all of our Zydeco loving listeners. I think
Zydeco.
I just was going with Rock and Randy, though, instead of like, you know, which was kind of a. Never mind. this reference is just too deep.
Chakotay confronts Tom, and Tom explodes on him, saying that Chakotay doesn't trust him. Chakotay then checks in with the captain to make sure she's okay with him disciplining Paris. Meanwhile, in sickbay, Kes and the doctor are discussing the doctor's issues with lapses in concentration and difficulty handling objects. Kes suggests that he may be attracted to Dinara. The doctor has no clue.
Romance is not a malfunction.
Romance is not part of my programming.
Eventually, Kes convinces him, and the next time he talks to Dinara, he makes the most awkward middle school advance.
By the way, Dinara, I've been meaning to tell you.
Yes?
I'm romantically attracted to you and wanted to know if you felt the same way. Is something wrong?
After this disaster, the doctor has a discussion with Tom at Sandrine's.
Mr. Paris, I assume you've had a great deal of experience being rejected by women.
Thanks a lot, Doc.
What I'd like to know is, what does one do to recover from the unpleasant symptoms of romantic rejection?
Meanwhile, Dinara talks to Kes in sickbay.
Maybe what you and the doctor need is to spend some time together, alone.
Finally, they spend some time together, alone, really getting to know one another.
What is it that we're supposed to be doing?
I believe it's called parking.
Then, we catch up with the Paris B plot and the Mole C plot, which are obviously headed towards something big, but it's something that won't be resolved in this episode. Still, it's important to episodes down the line, so let's listen in.
Sorry I'm late.
That's all right, Mr. Paris. We don't need you. Mr. Grimes has taken your place at Con.
But it's my shift.
Not today it isn't.
What, because I was 10 minutes late?
That's right.
Captain.
Don't look at me, Mr. Paris. Commander Chakotay has complete discretion in this matter.
So when should I report back for duty?
When you decide to start taking your job seriously, we'll discuss it. But right now, you're dismissed.
Get your hands off me!
Mr. Tuvok.
Yes, Captain.
Please escort Mr. Paris to the brig.
Oh, boy. Am I glad to see you. I wasn't even sure if they were giving you my messages.
I've gotten them all, Mike. You've been very helpful.
Do you know what they're asking me to do?
You mean about the warp coils? I was thinking you could do it by forcing the magnetic constrictors out of alignment.
Look, Seska, I don't mind feeding you information, but if you're planning some kind of attack...
I have no intention of raising my child on a Kazon ship. One way or another, I'm going to take Voyager. You can either help me, or you can suffer along with Janeway and the others. Don't worry, Mike. Everything's been planned to the letter. Here's how it's going to work.
Right. So as I mentioned earlier, this is the scene in which, you know, if you're watching this out of context, you know, you're thinking, what's going on with Paris and Chakotay? And I'm like, yeah, it's a mole hunt. It's a mole hunt. They're hunting a mole. They're making it look like Paris is like a jerk and he's going to want to rebel. So he might want to be part of, so the mole maybe will approach him kind of thing.
Yeah, because they don't monitor communications on their ship.
Well, and if they do, they're really not good at spotting illegal transmitters.
Yeah, right.
Really bad at that. And, oh, and by the way, earlier when the doctor was transferring the synaptic data, he said, get me an RF transmitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, he's just using basic radio for that.
Well, yeah, analog.
It was a high speed RF transmitter.
Yeah, I know. Then I heard the megahertz or tetrahertz or whatever he was talking about. I was like, okay, that's pretty high energy. But anyway, so this is what's going on with this part of the show. This is like, I think, the last that we see of this. So we know that Seska is directly involved, and you know, da 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 da. And we're probably leading up to, well, actually, I think all this gets resolved in the very next episode. And since I've already picked my Voyager episode, I won't pick that one for our next friend.
Well, here's the problem. As in Babylon 5, they would kind of wrap up the B plot with, for instance, Londo would make a significant decision regarding the B plot or something like that. There would be some sort of conclusion, whereas here it's just, all right, we're going to invade Voyager and it's going to be mine.
Right.
And she says that like every other episode she's in, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more talk, talk, talk.
She was not a complex villain, I don't think.
Yeah. You know, I'm sorry, but if you're going to have S vowel, SK vowel, you got to have Cisco. Seska's just not working for me.
Nope.
No, I don't know.
She's not working for you.
I hope so too. I didn't really enjoy that aspect of the first couple of seasons of Voyager, and like I just couldn't get my head around the Kazon anyway. Like that wacky hairstyle of theirs, just so
they're kind like of not grown up Oompa Loompas.
Wow, you are so right.
Oh, so wait, so you're saying that it's chocolate in their hair and not mud?
Yeah,
chocolate. Yeah. Well, they're wearing a Wonka wig.
That's totally.
It's a Wonka wig.
A Wonka wick?
A Wonka wig.
Wonka wig.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They're wearing a Wonka wig. It's made out of chocolate. But why would you want a wig made out of chocolate? Don't ask if you need to ask. You don't understand. Don't look at that either. Let's do a song and dance. I like William.
Yeah, I want to see them do that on Voyager. I want to see the Kazon do that song and dance.
Oompa Loompa. Oopa-dee-doo. Janeway, Seska's coming for you.
What do you do when your mole is a schmuck?
Wait, no. Don't
and
go.
And your pilot's acting
because
like that he just doesn't give a darn.
Yeah, see, that just brings Bill to that bad place. Don't do schmuck. You can do schmo.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, you know, I have to kind of agree with Taylor on this thing. Like, they could have probably, well, I mean, the fact is they shot the next episode where they resolve this plot line before they shot this one, though this clearly takes place before. And I think actually the star dates are kind of screwed up. Like, I think the star date on the next on the captain's log in the next episode is like earlier than the one it is on this one or something, which is kind of nuts, but, yeah, but whatever. I mean, this episode would probably have been better if they just ignored that and let it be like the, you know, bottle episode that it is. But again, I think they were trying to do stuff with extended storylines and whatnot.
Was that supposed to be their big bad?
What?
Seska? Yeah.
Yeah.
For that season.
Yeah, I just never. Yeah, I mean, I just. I never. I just.
She just wants never, to get off the Kazon ship. That's all she wants.
Yeah, she never really worked as a proper villain for me. Oh, my goodness. So Chris has now pasted in side-by-side comparisons of the Oompa Loompa and the Kazon. And actually, it looks more like the Kazon got his hair in Colorado and with some pine cones thrown in.
So look, the Kazon are just Oompa Loompa that have been left out in nature for too long.
Yeah, but
they're not taken care of. And so he's got ratty, nasty hair, and clearly something happened to his forehead. Because, you know, it's Star Trek, so it's the forehead.
Yeah, it's always the forehead and the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, they started out with just the ears, and they went with the forehead and the nose.
So wait, so here's my question. They put Paris down in the brig.
Yeah.
And the mole just is like calling like crazy, just saying, hey, guess what happened now? Hey, guess what happened now?
Yeah. Well, dissension among the ranks, as the Kazon says, is certainly of interest to Seska. It's an opening, you know. And right. The only other thing I wanted to say is like, wow, talk about Chakotay taking a dive. Did anybody actually believe that Paris pushed him even close to hard enough for him to fall over like that?
Does
he got a glass ankle? Actually
know what's going on for real right now, or was he still kept in the dark at this point?
Dark.
I know he was in the dark before.
Maybe Ooh. Janeway keeps the gravity setting a little bit lighter on the bridge.
Who's in the dark?
Chakotay.
I don't think he knows that Paris is like working this angle.
Oh,
at Janeway's behest.
I thought it was him and Paris's plan. It's actually Janeway and asked Paris to do this.
Yes.
Yeah. So
that's the way Janeway works, because she's Slytherin.
So that means that was a real pushdown.
Yeah. Slytherin.
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 Because Slytherin. We needed to mention another movie in this review.
Well, as long as we're off topic, I think it's interesting.
We were on topic. I was telling you that it was Janeway's plan.
No, you're right.
I just ran a bonus.
I forgot that, actually. I thought it was Chakotay and Paris's plan, but yeah, that makes sense. But yes, yeah, so Paris actually sent him ass over tea kettle, huh?
Yes.
Mr. Tuvok, put him in the brig.
In sickbay, we find out that someone has attempted to kill Dinara, but Dinara has a confession.
I administered the Nitoxin hole.
Didn't you know it would kill you?
You mean kill her?
She is you.
Was me. I don't ever want to be her again. I don't want to go through with the transfer.
If we don't get your neural patterns out of the hollow buffer, you'll be brain dead in a matter of days.
I can't let that happen.
I'd rather live two more days like this with you than go on for who knows how long, wasting away a piece at a time.
It's my duty to keep you alive.
I thought you were more than my doctor. I thought you were my friend.
I am your friend.
What kind of friend would ask me to go on living like this? And for what? So that I can go back to a world where everyone I ever loved has died. Where almost everyone I meet is going to die.
You're a doctor. You can help them.
I can't help them. I can't cure them. All I can do is prolong their suffering. Just like you want to do to me now.
I have no desire to see you suffer.
Do you know what it's like? Do you?
No, but
what it's like to be a 9-year-old child and suddenly your best friend doesn't want to come to your house anymore. And when you ask your mother why, won't Marla come and play with me anymore? And she tells you it's because the other children are afraid of you. Before I met you, I was just a disease. But now, everything's different. When people look at me, they don't see a disease anymore. They see a woman. A woman you love. A woman you're not afraid to touch.
Dinara, I was never afraid to touch you.
Why? Because you're a doctor?
Because I love you.
You say that now. But if I go through with the transfer...
If you go through with the transfer...
I will be sick again. And ugly.
Dinara, you're not ugly. You're simply ill.
Please. Stop patronizing me. I know how people see me.
Dinara, do you think if you go back into your own body, I'll feel different about you?
Won't you?
Listen to me. Nothing could ever change the way I feel about you. Not a few scars, not some diseased skin, nothing.
You have given me the most extraordinary gift that anyone has ever given me. You brought me to this ship where no one is sick and people are friendly. You've made me healthy and beautiful. I don't want to go back to the way things were.
You said before you knew me that you were just a disease. Well, before you, I was just a projection of photons held together by force fields. A computerized physician doing a job. Doing it exceptionally well, of course, but still, it was just a profession, not a life. But now that you are here, and my programming has adapted, I'm not just working anymore. I'm living, learning what it means to be with someone, to love someone. I don't think I can go back to the way things were either. Dinara, please, don't die.
I want us to be together.
So do I.
But if you put me back into that body, I'll have to go home and help my people.
I know. But we'd still have 2 weeks together. Dinara, please, be with me for as long as you can.
The doctor has the least prejudice out of anybody I have ever known.
Yes, he does.
And I think it's because he is completely unfettered by anything physical, because if he wanted to, he really could change what he looked like.
Yes.
He could give himself a goatee. He could change his clothes.
Yeah.
He could, you know, fix his hair.
He could make himself Vidian.
Yeah.
He could give himself another organ.
Nose.
Another nose, yeah.
Well, he made an addition to his program in the course of this episode.
Yep.
You know, at one point I was watching and he asked Kes to hand him a hypo, hand him something. And I'm like, he's a hologram. Why didn't he just have like stretchy arms like Mr. Fantastic and just reach across the sick bay to grab stuff? But it's not part of his program. And I mean, I tell you what, I would put that in my program immediately if I was a hologram.
Stretchy arms.
Yeah, but come on. That'd be awesome. You know, just like, never have to reach, never have to walk, just reach for stuff. And
but you know. Also, they start out where she's there and she's been poisoned by something in a hypo spray. And so he wants to get a bunch of people to figure out who's done it.
Right.
And I'm surprised she just didn't let it go so that time would be wasted.
I don't think she wanted to get other people in trouble.
No, I don't think she wanted to get them in trouble, but she just... she wanted to stay a hologram forever with him.
Well, for another few hours until it degraded.
Right. But she could have done that if she had like not copped to it being her.
Yeah, but then he'd be worried about investigating for that few hours.
Yeah. He would be wasting his time investigating it instead of spending it with her.
Yes.
So this is the heart of the episode.
Yeah, absolutely.
More than one way. And this really is a life moment for the doctor.
Yes.
Big and time. For her.
Yeah, that's true.
As it appears to be. She may not have had a relationship before.
Well, I don't think so, because she's been...
Well, she may have had a relationship with someone who had the phage.
Well, just judging...
I'm not getting that impression.
From her reaction when somebody tried to touch her or grab her hand, she just totally withdrew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, someone who appears healthy, yeah.
Yeah, and...
I kind of played this out in my mind earlier. I was going to make a similar comment, but in a kind of a snarky way, so I decided not to. But, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Kerry.
Well, I was going to say, she says that everyone around her is going to die, but existentially, that's the case of everyone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a matter of splitting hairs, I suppose. But
right.
I found this scene to be actually... like honestly touching, like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and it's a huge moment for the doctor because he's now, I don't know if I'm like, I can't say in the scale of events in his in the first two seasons, but this seems like a very huge moment where he is really going beyond his initial programming and he's become aware of it, you know, like, and yeah, it's, you know, the issue of sentience at this point seems to be moot, you know.
Yeah.
I think he really honestly loves this woman, and he's a computer program. It's amazing. You know, for the time it was written.
Right.
And these days we take these things as a matter of course, but back then.
Well, he has this massive ego in place, but he sets it aside for her.
Although,
not always.
He still manages to squeeze it in. Even during this heartfelt moment.
Yeah.
Doing it exceptionally of course.
Exceptionally well, of course. You know, it's like, yeah, he can't resist.
which is great. And that's a reflection of the original personality of the, what was his name?
Zimmerman.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
But that also shows that I think the capacity to love exists within Zimmerman too.
Right.
Otherwise, this would not have opened up as an option for him.
Oh, yeah, it's that just could that be.
The original programming was all focused on medical stuff.
Yes.
And how good he is.
Right.
Yeah.
How awesome he is at whatever he does.
Is this
except dancing.
Is this after the episode where he interacts with Zimmerman and gets some programming upgrades? Or before? No.
This was only
this season is before.
Two.
This is second season.
I don't have any idea what season that episode happened in. It makes sense it was a later one, but you wouldn't think that someone would think to put it in there, but his adaptability subroutine is probably pretty, maybe one of the most important subroutines in his programming, that adaptability.
Well, the goal is to deal with something that medical science hasn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that it's overall adaptability. It gives him a chance to kind of reprogram himself to a certain degree, just like any of us can.
Right.
It's just reacting to what's actually happening around him.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's what's happening within him. I mean, that scene where he's talking about loss of concentration and whatnot. I mean, that's that's intense. Like there's a chicken and egg aspect to that I'm not quite sure how to resolve. You know.
And he does go one further where he's back in the holodeck, and I notice it's totally empty. There's nobody in it, not even the bartender. And he's sitting at a table, and she comes in, and it's not her hologram, it's her.
And they dance.
And they dance, and he brushes her cheek, and she goes back to her colony, I guess, and we never hear about her again?
Nope. She appears again in another episode.
Oh, okay.
They encounter the Vidians again, and she's like, Schmullis! No one ever called him Schmullis again until then.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as she left.
Yeah.
I mean, Paris, if he weren't, like, in the middle of this subterfuge, would have been all like, so, Doc, so Schmullis, huh? I was like, dude, now that she's gone, let's just pretend that never happened. Yeah, good call, bro. Good call, bro.
Yeah.
Now, one clue about the Paris thing that I'm just now remembering is that, the doctor seeks him out for advice. And it's funny because the way it's acted and the way it's shot, it looks like he's getting hammered. It looks like he's, like getting hammered, right? But then when he goes to the bar, he pours what is clearly a coffee, you know, out of a coffee pitcher, you know?
Right.
And he's just drinking coffee. Huh. And so it's a little bit of a clue there, in my opinion, you know, that little Easter egg, if you will, of what is really going on in that plot line, which I thought was really cool. I like that.
Maybe he
was
spiking his coffee with something else.
Well, he didn't, though. Maybe. But I think the whole point was that he was, like, you know, putting on an act.
Right.
The other thing about the bar scene with Paris and the doctor, I thought the doctor really did some outstanding acting there where, you know, it's all patient confidentiality, but it's clear on his face where he just, his face sags, he puts his head down. It's definitely, you know, all about him, and you could see him hurting.
Because Robert Picardo is an awesome actor.
He is.
And this is kind of a classic love story put in the Star Trek universe, you know, boy and girl get together.
Boy meets girl. Girl has some life-threatening disease.
No, it's a classic
trope. There's some chemistry, but they totally screw it up.
Yeah.
They can't be together.
They talk to their friends, and then they get back together.
Right.
But
yeah,
talking about a life moment, the other part of the life moment is loss.
Right.
So even though she's not dying,
right, she's leaving and going back to her people.
Yeah, he's never going to see her again, right. And vice versa.
Right.
But at least she's alive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Like the greater loss would be that of her life. So
yes,
a couple lessons about loss there. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's cool. It's a lot of really good stuff in this thing. Yeah. I mean, it's got a pretty low Geos rating, I would say, though.
That's because a lot of it seems disjointed.
Because of all the Paris stuff jammed in there.
Because of all the Paris stuff that they just crammed in there. And I would have liked them to have explored a little bit more about, if you had to have a B story in there, it should have been about B'Elanna.
Yeah.
And
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a great point.
You know, what she went through with Dinara and helping her out. And then, I'm sorry, but if it might have been B'Elanna poisoning her.
Yeah.
Well,
it could have been a possibility.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, fine, I'll give you the skin graft, but you're not going to – well, that doesn't make any sense. If she agrees to give her the piece of her brain, she's not going to
– Well, I mean
– poison her,
maybe
though.
She doesn't want her to go back and live to take more organs from other people.
Well, maybe that piece of her brain that they took was the last tiny bit of compassion she had for them.
Yeah.
Putting on rage. A lot of smash.
But you're right. That was a few sentences – and I think it probably should have been more after she had been organs taken away from her, whatever it was. I don't remember.
Yeah, experimented on at least.
Yeah, that would have been a way better B plot.
And I think executive producer Jerry Taylor said it perfectly, that this is a good episode marred by this B plot.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's discuss the episode name meaning, life signs.
Well, we're seeing signs of life in the doctor.
Yeah, I think that's right. What it is.
I think that's the main metaphor.
Yeah.
And also, of course, you know, looking for life signs to keep her alive. You want to keep her life signs active or whatever. At the end.
And then she goes off to help other people to keep their life signs going.
I think the greater question is like, because the doctor has a line, before I was just treating patients. Now I'm living.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest sign of life of all right there. You know, it's like there's one thing because that's huge, huge, huge for any person to realize that truth of like what it is that the individual, whatever, because it's always an individual thing that what an individual needs to live as right, defined yeah. by as defined by the individual
yep.
in a way, you know, because like for him, he's now found love and now he's living because he can. Maybe experience that again, or you know, I mean, a lot of what I find that makes life worth living is playing guitar, you know. So yeah.
Well, but humans are social creatures, and that's for the most part programmed right into the core.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, of course, that part comes across into the doctor.
Oh right.
People just desire companionship.
Yeah.
And sharing. Which may be why we went off topic so many times.
Right.
To share our other experiences.
Yeah, it's all, ladies and gentlemen, as you can now see, it's all part of the show. It's all part of the act. That's what I always say to the end of the mic when I really have a horrendous mistake on stage. Unfortunately, I had to say that last night. Oh, no, it's okay. I think I represented pretty well, but I just missed a couple of chords. Like, what? And I was like, don't worry, y'all. It's all part of the show. It's all part of the act.
All right, German episode name.
I don't even know where to go with this one. If it's not...
Avoid the B-plot. Don't...
Yeah, it's like Paris is on a mole hunt and Seska rears her ugly... It's a Cardassian head.
I think it's just ignore the B plot. That's the German episode title.
If you ignore the B plot, you'll enjoy this episode.
Yes.
All right. This one should be a little bit easier. Clickbait episode name.
The doctor couldn't, but now he can. Click here to see his secret.
What do photonic beings drink while they're on a date?
Yeah, the 10 best cocktails to give your photonic date when you're on your first photonic date.
The answer would be light beer.
Oh
jeez.
Oh, my. Oh, God.
Wow.
I just snorted.
How about 10 things not to ask a person while your finger is in their brain?
Yeah.
All right, ratings. All right, I picked this episode.
Why not?
It's an
why
important.
Not?
Because Chris always asks us why we pick episodes. I think it's only fair to say, why did you pick this episode?
It's an important character development episode for the Doctor.
That's okay, true.
And I like the Doctor. Although there are some people who like Star Trek who hate the Doctor. They're Doctor haters.
Well, technically, I'm a Doctor hater, just not this Doctor.
I like Bashir.
Yeah, Mike doesn't.
I immediately thought of Pulaski.
Yeah, that was Jinx originally referring to, but I guess I'm a double Dr. Hader.
You're a duo Dr. Hader.
That's right.
Dr. Hader, Dr. Hader, report to surgery, Dr. Hader.
This is a difficult one because, again, they split it up and the B plot failed.
Yeah.
Failed. So I'm going to have to give this a solid. It could have been higher. I really enjoyed this love story. And I think Star Trek fans are mature enough to enjoy a love story in Star Trek.
Yeah. When it's done well. I mean, there's been a lot of misses on that front in Star Trek, in my opinion.
You mean like Plato's stepchildren?
Yeah, that's a love story, huh? A love story with Alexander and the humans.
But this was done really well.
I agree. Yeah.
And it had more weight to it than just a love story.
Right.
Because it was bringing life. It's alive!
Yes. Oh, that's
look,
a good one.
Her holographic hand is moving. It's alive! It's alive!
All right, next up, Carrie.
I actually like the story of the doctor and this young lady, Dinara. I thought it was very moving and touching. It was there was a lot of good emotion in it. Sadly, Jerry Taylor's right. Marred by that horrible, horrible insert of that B story. Why couldn't they just not talk about it this episode and do it the next one?
Well, the next one's when they resolve it, so.
Doesn't matter. They could have stuck it in another one and then resolved it after that.
Yeah.
They could have stuck it in another crappy episode.
Yeah. Why not put it in an episode that's still...
Yeah, don't put it in a good episode. Put it in a crappy episode.
Yeah. It might have made a bad episode slightly better.
You know what? Yeah. You got a point there. That's a fair point.
Yeah, you definitely do.
So, I mean...
You know, do you think that they were sitting in their office going through the scripts and say, well, this one's crap. Let's stick that pair of stuff in there.
They should have.
They have
some clue.
They have some clue that this was horrible. They've admitted, like, in the interviews afterwards, yeah, I knew it was pretty bad on some of them. So they know sometimes. Yeah. They know.
Okay, just a few episodes before that, they could have wrapped that up in Threshold.
Oh, my God. That would have been way better.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Out of canon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they couldn't do it in that one.
Hang on a second. No, they couldn't. But well, that just makes it even more confusing.
Yeah.
Like how long was this B plot going on for?
Apparently like two episodes.
Oh, okay.
After Threshold was Meld, and then it was Dreadnought, and then Death Wish, and then Life Signs.
So possibly three, because there was no sign of it in Threshold.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah, it's just unfortunate. Anyway.
Yep.
What do you say, Carrie?
So I don't want to tarnish the whole episode by the fact that, you know, they felt the need to put that schlock in there.
Yeah, they did it for you.
You can't give it two ratings, Carrie.
I'm not, but I'm just saying
that. I give the A plot a 10, but the B plot a 2.
Right.
I have done that before.
But then it just averages. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I really would give the B plot like a 1, but I don't want to drag down the entire episode for that B plot. So I'm going to pretend that the B plot was Threshold. Not actually there, because that's the only way I can do this, because it was distracting. It was jarring and it really sucked, because I am not going to believe that Paris can take down Chakotay. Chakotay could wipe the floor with him. So I am going to give it a 7.5.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, I'd give it an 8, but I have to bring it down a little bit for the stupid B plot. But I'm going to pretend for the most part that it's not there, because I really did think it had emotional character. It had a lot of character development. It had a lot of emotional content. And you know what? If they took that garbage out, it could make a really good movie.
Yeah.
Way better than, you know, the guy that gets uploaded to the internet.
Right.
Okay. Mike,
I am unable to totally disassociate the horrible B plot from it, unfortunately. So I'm going to agree with Six and with Chris. Oh, his name is Six. That works right. Good. I'm going to agree with Captain Six and give it a solid six.
I'm gonna give the B plot a 9, actually, because I no, I'm kidding.
I think you're going on the inverse scale.
Yeah, the inverse scale. No, those scenes are a pain in the rear to have in this particular episode.
Right.
Period. However, I don't necessarily disagree with what they were trying to do there. You know, like, I kind of like the idea of, like, these interconnected things. And Paris's character was such that, you know, he was always just a little bit on the edge. So it was actually kind of believable. Like, okay, what happened to Paris? Like, something – like, okay, he's being a schmuck again. See how I did there, Mike?
Yes, that was good.
And he, you know, and whatnot. So I don't necessarily think those things are so bad. However, there's just no place for it in this episode, because if it could stand alone on its own so well without it. And I thought Carrie's idea of the B'Elanna B plot is really interesting. Overall, I'm going to give it a 6 as well, because I think it is very strong. And I would watch it, like, if somebody in my area was broadcasting it and I saw it, I was like, oh, it's the one where the doctor falls in love. I would watch it, sure. Yeah, and I think it is. All right, let's put it this way. I don't know. Of course, we'll never know, but I don't know that I would necessarily give it more than a 6. Maybe I would say it was exceptional, 6.5 without the B plot. I don't know. I think it's a 6, though. Either way, I mean, if judging it just on the merits of the A plot, I think I'd still probably give it a 6. Yeah, because
Bill's a jerk.
Because Bill's a jerk. Well, this isn't your first clue.
Oh man,
this wasn't your first clue.
You know, you have to be self-deprecating to be on this career.
You better be, because if you're not, someone's going to do it for you.
What was that?
Unknown.
For 100 Quatloos.
This is a test of some kind, isn't it?
Wager. 100 Quatloos. 400 Quatloos. 200 Quatloos against.
Hey everybody, welcome to Technologic Trivia.
We made it!
Yay! I know you're all excited.
Just to come on down, but not Quatloos.
Get some Quatloos. So, Bill, you have 206 Quatloos.
Yes!
Nice.
We need to get a 3-time multiplier on that for you.
Ooh, a fortnightly triple?
Maybe, just for Bill.
Yeah. That's so nice, thank you.
Because even 3 times your score is still less than Mike, who has 661 Quatloos. Awesome. And
boom.
Chris has 697 Quatloos. And I like the idea of, like, deleting them all and starting again.
No, I don't like that. That's a bad idea.
Big Quatloo reset button.
Oh, I thought that was for the... For the
listeners? Oh, no. They want you guys to bet more.
Yeah.
Oh.
See, unfortunately
we didn't bet much then either.
Unfortunately for us to bet more, we'd actually have to know more.
Yeah. Or maybe the proper verb is remember.
Yeah. Remember more?
Yes.
Because we've probably seen all these things, but I mean, God, I don't, you know, like, so there was one question like, oh, I remember that episode, but... Yeah, no idea what that detail is.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay, Bill.
I am here.
Who played returning Ensign Wesley Crusher's love interest in The Game?
Ashley Judd.
Gosh. Even I know you got that one right.
I think I missed that one.
Bill's catching up.
You did not miss that one. You wish you missed that one.
Actually, I don't think I was there for The Game. I think Jane came on that episode because I was not available.
Were you not available on purpose because you knew it was The Game?
Was that the one where they stuck stuff on their heads? Or is that the one where they went down to the planet and Wesley Crusher got in trouble for playing ball?
No.
That was Jane.
The Game was Jane?
Yep.
Oh, yes. All
in Technologic 9.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. In the episode The Enemy Within, how cold did the planet... Alpha, A-L-F-A, 177, get at night.
Minus 440 degrees.
what unit? Doesn't matter.
Because
he's so close anyway.
Ah. Yeah, no. Was it A, minus 300 degrees Fahrenheit, B, minus 250 degrees Fahrenheit, C, I won't even read C, D, should I read C?
No,
C, C, 32 degrees Fahrenheit, or D, 40 degrees Fahrenheit.
I'm going to say minus 250, B. All right.
Nice.
And for y'all keeping up at home, that's wicked cold.
Yeah,
that's right, Fahrenheit.
Wicked cold. Wicked cold. Yes, yeah. And then we got that cold up there in Maine. Yeah,
because negative 40 degrees Fahrenheit is the same thing as negative 40 degrees Celsius. But if they really wanted to be truly sciencey, they should have done it in Kelvin.
That's what we measure in our household. Yes. It was hard to find a thermostat that does it in Kelvin.
All right, Chris.
Yep.
What life forms did Lieutenant Barclay see in the transporter after beaming from the USS Yosemite?
A spider.
None of these say spider. I thought you were going to say bears.
Oh.
Elk.
Spider bear.
Is it A, lycosins, B, pattern snakes, C, quasi-energy microbes, or D, plexers?
I have no idea. Although pattern snakes sound straight out of Amber.
Yes, it does.
So I'm going to have to go with pattern snake.
I thought you were going to say it sounds like a song Frank Zappa would sing. It's C, quasi-energy microbes.
Oh. What? Didn't they end up being people? Or is that a different episode?
How do you keep track of the Barclay episodes?
I think you're thinking about the A-team.
No, I'm not thinking about... I'm definitely not thinking about
No.
Yeah, the episode where Murdoch was beamed away and he saw people in the field.
I'm telling you, boss, I may be crazy, but I know what I saw in that transporter beam. Hey.
Bill?
Elvis in him, didn't he? Yes, Carrie.
How did the hyrogen species break down the bones and muscle tissue of their prey?
I'm sorry, say their name one more time.
Hyrogen, H-I-R-O-G-E-N.
Hyrogen.
Hyrogen, yeah.
Hyrogen.
Does that help?
I'm going to say with a corrosive acidic excretion.
From what orifice?
Oh, does that
Chris,
have to be from...
Wait, no, Chris can't even see the book. Don't listen to Chris.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry. Was it A, enzymes?
Well...
B, teeth? C, tetrion emitters? Or D, osteotomy?
I'm going to go with enzymes.
Which are not acid, by the way.
No, they're not acid.
They are proteins.
They are proteins.
It wins.
All right.
So three Quatloos for me this week so far.
Yeah. Yay!
Hey. Go Bill.
Team Bill.
Yes, I wish that I had a cheering team with me right now.
Woo, Bill, go! Awesome, Bill.
Okay, answer questions. Get Quatloos. You're the guy who can also play the blues. And you, I don't know. I'm terrible. It's terrible.
Okay, Mike.
Yes.
If you get this wrong.
Oh, here we go.
We're going to put you back in cleaning toilets.
Baby puppies are going to be crying.
I hope that it's actually C. And he asked, but he gets it without having to go to multiple choice. But the answer was C in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So,
that's like one of those horror movie things for me. The call is coming from inside the house.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. What department deals with astronomy and star mapping aboard a starship?
Come on. Oh, really? Really?
That one that Seven of Nine built.
Yes. Oh, you better go get your rubber gloves and your plunger, my friend. Because I had I had a lot of beans for dinner. Oh, this is rich.
I can see the room.
This, It's delicious. This is so good. Oh, I'm loving this moment so much.
And we had that awesome episode where the doctor prepared a long speech.
Yeah, well, yes, we did.
At moments like this, I think it's important to reflect. Oh, God. I wish the Kazon would attack anything.
You are so red right now.
Hold on. I just want to say that you're matching your shirt.
I cannot remember the name of that freaking room.
Oh. You want multiple choice?
I'm going to need the multiple choice.
Oh. Okay. Is it A, Starbase, B, Astrology, C, Stellar Cartography?
See? That's B, why!
Station Deck.
I warned you, man!
That's why I couldn't freaking get it. It's going to be Stellar Cartography.
Oh. What is it going to be, Mike?
Stellar Cart... I'm not saying the letter. Stellar Cartography. Unbelievable.
That screen grab is priceless, by the way. That should be your profile pic from now on. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
And that's was... when I tell you that I actually switched A and C.
Yeah, you didn't.
Oh, that was good. Wow. That was awesome. That was super deluxe.
Okay, wait. Now I got to go up here. You can see.
So you can show me that you switched A and C? See, but that doesn't matter. Because you are the quiz master. You made the answer C, which is why I couldn't get it.
Are you claiming some sort of bias against you, Mike?
By the letter C? Yes. Absolutely.
I'm going to make all of them C from now on.
I think we need to do a compilation reel of every time the Sesame Street was sponsored by the letter C.
And see if I hate all of those episodes?
Just put it on
C
a loop.
C is for three. Mike. It's good enough for me. Oh. Okay, Chris.
Yes.
Oh, Chris. What was the name of Neelix's cargo ship?
The Goldfish.
No. Was it A, the Wixieban, B, the Dexa, C, Kess, or D, Baxiel?
B.
Oh, man.
It was the Baxiel. It did have an X in it.
I knew it.
Okay. Let's see about double. The Fortnightly Double.
Goose egg for me.
Yep. You can make up for it here.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. You're going to have to be specific on this one.
Of course we are.
38 microns.
If you know the answer, write down your wager and your answer on a piece of paper, and you're going to show it when I tell you.
Right.
Except for Bill, who will just type it. Okay. So here's your week fortnightly double. Eventually, I'll stop saying weekly. What sparked Sisko's decision to leave Deep Space Nine in Tears of the Prophets?
Wasn't it a baseball game?
Probably.
I'll take a pass.
Yeah, I'm not going to come up with anything specific on that.
Mike's going for it.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, because it's probably C.
Let's see if I know.
You get to look at the multiple choice.
Ooh,
and she still got it wrong. That means it's a really hard one.
Wow. Okay, so that becomes a listener's question. So listeners, if you can tell me what sparked Sisko's decision to leave Deep Space Nine in Tears of the Prophets, you can send me a private message on our forums, a direct message on Twitter, or email me at carrie@technologic.com. And you can earn two Qualus.
Two Qualus.
Okay, now we're going to go ahead and we're going to award.
Bill, was that Ruck? Sounded like him.
Who's Ruck?
Lurch.
That's the same guy?
Adam's Family.
That was the same guy?
Yeah. Ted Cassidy. Can't believe I know his name. Jeez.
Holy, yeah, wow.
And
the funny thing is, I actually saw an interview with him, and I didn't put it together. It was the same guy. Wow. Huh.
Okay.
But yeah, I was kind of thinking along those lines, yeah.
Good evening, Mr. Adams.
All right, so now we're going to award Quatloos from episode 152. Wait, 153, because I'm looking at last week's.
Right.
Whew. Okay. So in 153, we gave you the one Quatloo weekly fortnightly double, where you had to come up with who said risk is our business. And answering correctly were Jay from Brazil, Matthias, Omega 47, the Scarlet Phantom, Thorley Winston, and yet another Matt. But who do you think they answered? Mike, come on, you know who said risk is our business, because I said it in one of the movies.
Didn't they? It wasn't somebody's guess. I think it was Captain Kirk they were guessing.
Yes. Captain Kirk. James Tiberius Kirk said risk is our business. So, Jay from Brazil, Matthias, Omega 47, the Scarlet Phantom, mm-hmm. Thorley Winston, and yet another Matt.
All got a Quatloo.
Matt C., you all get a Quatloo for answering with James T. Kirk. Woo!
All right.
All right. Nice play. Nice play.
All right. Shout out goes to Christian1313 for TrekkingLogicAnalyzer.JustPlainApps.com. It's updated through Trekkingologic 150.
So last night I played at a benefit in Hoboken for a really good foundation, and the website for it it's named after a child who suffered this particular disease. It's called AidenHasAPosse.org, because I guess by helping out we're all a member of his posse, and they've actually been able to affect a lot of great change in the way infants are scanned for this particular disease. It's a disease that, if detected, is treatable, but it happens, it occurs in so few people that they don't automatically scan for it. But if they don't scan for it when a child is an infant, then it's basically going to be too late to do anything about it. So it was a really we had a really good time raising some money for this cause, and the founder was there. The founder of this organization is the husband and wife that own Indian Larry Motorcycles in Brooklyn, and she gave us she gave us a story. She told us her story. She shared it with us, and you know, these benefits that we do, it's nice and heart wrenching at the same time to have the reason sort of just that we're all there. Pointed out so clearly and so eloquently by her. And so, you know, if you have a chance, just check it out. That's it.
All right, and that is AidenHasAPosse.org.
At least I think
it
is.
We'll put it on our front page, right, with the show notes?
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, let me double check, because
I just checked.
Oh, you did check. Okay. I got it right.
You didn't.
I did not. What did I do? Didn't I spell it right?
You put ADN.
Oh.
Put an extra I in there.
Yeah. Sounds like a typo. Sounds like a typical Hamilton typo.
All right. Thank you for listening. Oh, and you know what? We love feedback. In fact, we read, listen to, and discuss our feedback in the Listening Post podcast, which was released last week. You can give us feedback by giving us a nice iTunes review, by emailing us at feedback@trekkinglogic.com. You can even email us voicemails. You can tweet us at Trekkinglogic. You can find us on Facebook and Google+. And we have a Trekkinglogic forum at trekkinglogic.com. Carrie, what are we reviewing next time?
Next fortnight, we're going to go observe the Enterprise. Except it's not really the Enterprise. It's the NX-01.
Well, it's still the Enterprise, but it's...
It's called the NX-01. In the Enterprise episode Fight or Flight, where Dr. Phlox plays double duty as a vet on Hoshi's pet Sluggo.
Nice.
Get another lizard part?
Hope so. Let's
probably. Get that poor lizard, though. It doesn't have any more parts left.
That chameleon.
I always love those trans species transplants.
That's right.
Well, until then, on behalf of everyone here at Trekkinglogic, love long and prosper.
This exact procedure was developed by Dr. Leonard McCoy in the year 2253.
I'm equipped with the collective bloopers of more than 3,000 cultures.
So much about what happens to people this happens to.
How about this?
I read what I'm told to.
Yeah.
Is there a way that would have worked that I just didn't say it the right?
Yes.
No. It worked fine. It just sounded funny.
How do you know so much about what happens to the people that this happens to?
Right. It works, but this will sound better.
See, we have so many children that Chris just forgets the years.
That I got mixed up.
So, you know, that is Matt's birthday, but that's the year Maverick was born.
Oh, he's just thinking about the other kid, Matvick.
This is going to be important when they both go through that horrible transporter accident and become one person.
Yes. I am the peacemaker.
I am the gatekeeper.
He is the keymaster.
Of course you are.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow.
Your choice has been registered.
You've wasted no time.
Wait, I don't remember anyone making a choice.
See, this is where you don't remember choosing.
Yeah, I said I will pick the phage episode.
We were continuing our Ghostbusters theme, Bill. You missed it.
Yes. That's all that was.
Oh, wait, what?
Don't you remember phage, the choice phage. Has been made?
Oh, God.
That is the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man.
Right.
But we're not reviewing that movie either.
Oh.
That has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, that one doesn't even have time travel.
Let's just hang out and talk about whatever the heck we want to talk about episode.
Have an artificial body.
I'm probably going to
say, can we have our holographic representatives review this episode so we can just hang out? Because that'd be great, actually. I'd love that.
I'm going to probably have to put this whole section in the bloopers.
No, just call it special edition.
Yeah.
No, don't put it.
The crew gets chummy.
Oh.
Just leave it in.
All right.
I'm
sorry. I muted the wrong mic. Having multiple U's.
Well, your holographic lungs just forced you to sneeze. That's kind of odd.
That would be me again.
That's you.
But it hasn't been 20 years.
Huh?
You got to wait 20 years before you give spoilers.
Of all
you,
of us.
You, as always, are Dr. Mung Mung.
Yeah, how many people get that reference?
Oh,
that's like room temperature fire.
That's right.
I don't know what that's from, but that sounds hilarious.
The doctor's issue with lapses in concentration and difficulty.
We do not dress our dog up.
Here on the USS Off Topic, we review Star Trek episodes when we remember to get around to it and talk about whatever comes across our brain pan.
You know, how come this always happens on the episodes I have to edit?
Well, apparently he's left.
I think he is. Taking advantage of the fact that we can't see him and step away from the computer.
Bill, we know you're not there.
And Chris, do you have a writing utensil?
I do.
That I can steal?
There's no stealing.
I can steal a writing utensil.
Crap.
Yeah.